Good afternoon. I'm Sarah Collins, Vice President for Healthcare Coverage and Access at the Commonwealth Fund. For those of you who may not be familiar with our work, the Commonwealth Fund is a nonpartisan private foundation. We aim to promote a high-performing healthcare system that improves access and quality of care for all people, particularly for society's most vulnerable, including low-income people, the uninsured, and racial and ethnic minorities. We support and produce independent research on healthcare issues with the goal of improving healthcare policy and practice. Thank you for joining us to hear about the findings of a new study, How the Affordable Care Act Has Narrowed Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Access to Healthcare, which will be published tomorrow. I'll provide some brief background and then turn to the lead author of the study, Jesse Baumgartner of the Commonwealth Fund, for an overview of the findings. The information discussed on this call is embargoed until 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, January 16th. As part of our effort to see how well health insurance is working for Americans in getting and affording the health care they need, we thought it was important to look at the experiences of Black and Hispanic Americans. Historically, Black and Hispanic people in the United States have been far less likely to have health insurance or access to health care, often skipping the care they need because of high costs. Our report shows that the Affordable Care Act led to historic improvements in coverage and access to care for Black and Hispanic adults, while also reducing disparities with white adults. Medicaid has been a significant factor in narrowing racial disparities in health care. Black adults in states with expanded eligibility for Medicaid now have lower uninsured rates than white adults in states that did not expand Medicaid. However, some of this progress has stalled or even eroded since 2016. For example, the uninsured rate among Black and white adults has risen slightly since 2016, and there has been no improvement since 2016 in the uninsured gap between the two groups. As the 2020 campaign season progresses, we hope debates around healthcare will focus on how we address our health system's longstanding racial inequities. Whether we can build on the progress made since the Affordable Care Act will depend on policies like expanding eligibility for Medicaid and enhancing insurance subsidies, as well as addressing racial bias in our healthcare system. Ensuring that everyone can afford and receive high-quality healthcare is essential to a high-performing health system. I'll turn to Jesse now for a more in-depth discussion of the report findings. Jesse is Research Associate for Healthcare Coverage and Access and Tracking Health System Performance here at the Commonwealth Fund.
Thanks, Sarah. In addition to Sarah, I want to recognize my other co-author, David Radley, who is on the call, as well as former Commonwealth Fund senior researcher, Susan Hayes. The report we are releasing tomorrow uses data from two federal surveys between 2013 and 2018, the American Community Survey, or ACS, conducted by the U.S. Census Bureau, and the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, or BRFIS, conducted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The methodology can be found on slide 20 in your exhibits. The purpose of this report is to analyze how the ACA has helped reduce racial and ethnic disparities in insurance coverage and access to healthcare since the main coverage expansions went into effect in 2014. Specifically, we examine differences among working-age Black, Hispanic, and white adults. To do this, we looked at differences between these three groups across three indicators: adults ages 19 to 64 who are uninsured, adults ages 18 to 64 who went without care because of cost in the past 12 months, and adults ages 18 to 64 who reported having a usual source of care. We examined the degree to which racial and ethnic differences have narrowed between 2013 to 2018, and we also looked at differences that exist between states that have expanded Medicaid and those that have not. Please go to Exhibit 1, where we provide an overview of the study's findings. First, we find that the coverage expansions under the ACA have led to historic reductions in racial and ethnic disparities between Black and Hispanic adults and white adults across both insurance coverage and access to care. However, as Sarah mentioned, this progress has stalled and in certain cases eroded since 2016. Second, we find that disparities in coverage and access measures narrowed across the country, and especially within states that expanded Medicaid eligibility under the ACA. Because of this, Black adults living in expansion states are now more likely to be insured than white adults in non-expansion states. We also highlight that despite the positive effect of Medicaid expansion on coverage and access inequities, almost half of black working-age adults are living in the 15 states that have still not implemented Medicaid expansion.
Exhibit 2.
In this exhibit, we see that according to the Census Bureau's American Community Survey, black, Hispanic, and white working-age adults have all made historic insurance coverage gains since 2013. Black and Hispanic adults began the period with much higher uninsured rates and have made the largest gains. Hispanic adults, seen it with the teal line, improved by more than 15 percentage points through 2018. Black adults, represented in orange, improved by almost 10 points, and white adults, represented in dark blue, improved by almost 6 points. Turning to Exhibit 3, we see that this significantly reduced disparities between black and Hispanic adults and white adults. The difference between black and white adults decreased by 4.1 percentage points, and the Hispanic-white gap dropped by 9.4 points. However, this progress largely stopped after 2016, and as Sarah mentioned, uninsured rates for black and white adults have actually increased slightly since that time. Exhibit 4. The coverage gains under the ACA made it easier for people to get health care, and adults with lower incomes have benefited the most. To explore how the law has reduced racial and ethnic differences in financial barriers to accessing care, we examined the percentage of adults who reported avoiding care because of cost during the past 12 months. Black and Hispanic adults, who are more likely to have lower incomes, experienced greater cost-related access problems leading into 2013. While all three groups again improved on this measure, black and Hispanic adults, represented in the orange and teal lines, made the largest improvements. Similar to insurance coverage, these improvements largely came between 2013 to 2016. Turning to Exhibit 5, we see that this narrowed the disparities. The difference between black and white adults decreased from 8.1 to 4.7 percentage points, and the Hispanic-white difference dropped from 12.7 to 8.3 points. Exhibit 6. Our third indicator is the rate of people reporting a usual source of care, such as a personal doctor or a provider facility they typically use when sick. This is considered a strong indicator of healthcare access. In this chart, we see that white adults, the dark blue line, reported a consistently high rate of having a usual source of care between 2013 and 2018. Black and Hispanic adults reported a modest increase of about 3 percentage points each. As seen on Exhibit 7, this lowered the disparities between the two groups and white adults by an almost identical amount, just over 3.5 percentage points. Exhibits 8 and 9. Now, I'm going to talk about the differences in these reported measures for individuals living in Medicaid expansion states versus non-expansion states, starting with black adults. The ACA offered the states the opportunity to expand Medicaid eligibility, with the federal government covering most of that cost. We calculated average annual rates on all three of our indicators for individuals across two categories. The states that had expanded Medicaid under the ACA by January 1, 2018, and the states that had not. In Exhibit 8, we show that black adults in Medicaid expansion states, represented by the solid orange line, reported larger coverage gains than those in non-expansion states, represented by the dotted line. While starting from a stronger baseline, uninsured rates in expansion states declined by 11.4 percentage points versus 8.6 points in non-expansion states. Turning to Exhibit 9, we overlay the uninsured rates for white adults with the two dark blue lines and see the disparities have decreased in both groups of states. Because of their coverage gains, black adults in Medicaid expansion states, shown by the solid orange line with the highlight box at the end, are now less likely to be uninsured than white adults in non-expansion states, shown with the dotted dark blue line. Exhibit 10 and 11. All three groups in both Medicaid expansion and non-expansion states have become increasingly less likely to report cost-related access problems since 2013. On Exhibit 10, black adults in expansion states, the solid orange line, started from a stronger baseline and still reported a larger improvement in cost-related access problems than those in non-expansion states, the dotted line. Black adults in expansion states reported a decline of 6.6 percentage points compared to a decline of 4.7 points in non-expansion states. Turning to Exhibit 11, disparities between black and white adults decreased in both groups of states, resulting in more equitable access to care. Following that progress, black adults in expansion states, the solid orange line with the highlight box at the end, are now reporting cost-related access problems at around the same rate as white adults in non-expansion states, represented by the dotted dark blue line. Exhibits 12 and 13. For usual source of care, on Exhibit 12, we show that black adults in Medicaid expansion states, the solid orange line, improved from 73.5% to 77.2%. This is greater than the level reported by black adults in non-expansion states, the dotted line. Turning to Exhibit 13, white adults introduced with the two dark blue lines did not report improvement in either expansion or non-expansion states. Because of this, disparities narrowed. Black adults in Medicaid expansion states, the solid orange line with the highlight box at the end, are now more likely to report having a usual care provider than white adults in non-expansion states, the dotted dark blue line. They are also not far behind white adults in expansion states, the solid dark blue line. Exhibits 14 and 15. We will now look at the reported experience of Hispanic adults in both groups of states. In Exhibit 14, Hispanic adults in Medicaid expansion states, shown with the solid teal line, started from a stronger baseline and still reported larger coverage gains than those in non-expansion states, shown in the dotted line. Hispanic adults in expansion states reported a decrease in the uninsured rate of 17.2 percentage points compared to 12.6 points in non-expansion states. Turning to Exhibit 15, we again overlay white adults in the dark blue lines. You can see that because of these gains, the difference between Hispanic and white adults decreased in both Medicaid expansion and non-expansion states. Again, the drop was greater in expansion states. The Hispanic-white coverage disparity decreased from 23.2 percentage points to 12.7 points in those states, as highlighted with the colored boxes. Exhibit 16. Hispanic adults in both Medicaid expansion and non-expansion states reported similar declines in cost-related access problems between 2013 and 2018, around 6.7 percentage points. As you see here on the chart, Hispanics in expansion states, the solid line, with the solid teal line, did this while starting from a stronger baseline, and they continue to report lower cost-related access problems than those in non-expansion states. Though not shown here, the improvement lowered disparities with white adults in both groups of states. Exhibit 17, for usual source of care, Hispanic adults in Medicaid expansion states continue to report higher rates than those living in non-expansion states. Hispanic adults in both groups of states improved around 3 percentage points, though the improvement was not statistically significant in non-expansion states. Exhibit 18, as demonstrated through our analysis, Medicaid expansion has been an important tool for improving racial equity in coverage and access to care. But expanded Medicaid eligibility still is not available to many of these adults. From our demographic estimates, 46% of working-age black adults live in the 15 states that have not yet expanded, along with more than a third of Hispanics. To better understand the potential impact of additional expansion, we analyzed two southern states with large black adult populations. Louisiana chose to expand Medicaid in mid-2016, while Georgia still has not expanded. In this chart, we examine uninsured rates for low-income white and black adults in both states, those under 200% of the federal poverty level. From 2013 to 2015, the uninsured rate dropped significantly for low-income black adults in both states, represented by the two orange lines, from over 40% down to near 30%. But when Louisiana expanded Medicaid in July of 2016, you can see that the uninsured rate for low-income black adults in the state, the solid orange line, continued to drop all the way down to 14%. Lower-income black adults in Georgia, represented by the dotted orange line, did not improve after 2016 and ended 2018 at 30.4%. Exhibit 19. Looking forward, the data presented here show that the ACA's coverage expansions have led to nationwide improvement in coverage and access to care since 2013, and a historic drop in racial and ethnic disparities. Unfortunately, progress has stalled and even eroded since 2016. This has occurred alongside congressional inaction, with no further legislation passed since 2010 to enhance the ACA. It has also coincided with recent legislation and executive actions that have negatively affected coverage and access. Further, we have noted the significant impact here of Medicaid expansion on racial and ethnic disparities. This means that the failure to expand Medicaid in the remaining 15 states has a larger negative impact on black and Hispanic communities. This effect is amplified further for black adults because of their greater representation in those states, putting them at significant risk of falling into a Medicaid coverage gap where their income is too high for existing Medicaid in the state, but not high enough to qualify for marketplace premium subsidies. In our report, we note that several policy options could further reduce disparities within coverage and access. These include different strategies for filling the Medicaid coverage gap, as well as enhancing ACA marketplace subsidies. However, proposals that end Medicaid expansion altogether would likely reduce the ACA's historic reductions in racial and ethnic disparities. Finally, we note in closing that the policy options presented in this report can all help make the U.S. healthcare system more equitable, but they will need to be accompanied by efforts to address non-coverage-related drivers in racial health inequities. And now I'll turn the call back over to Sarah.
Thank you, Jesse, and we'll take questions now. Our co-author is also here to answer your questions, David Radley, who is Senior Scientist in the Commonwealth Fund's Tracking Health System Performance Program.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star one now. And our first question comes from Paige Cunningham from The Washington Post. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for doing this call. Was just wondering, when you were looking at the overall uninsured rate among black and white Americans in the expansion versus non-expansion states, I know you gave overall insured rates, but were there any particular states that bucked the trend where, you know, now it's still the case that the uninsured rate among blacks is still higher than among whites in the uninsured blacks in the expansion states versus whites in the non-expansion states?
I just want to thank you for the question. I just want to make sure I understand the question. So you're asking whether or not black uninsured rates in expansion states are higher than white. I'm not sure what the question is.
I guess I was wondering if there were any particular examples of individual states where that trend wasn't true, or if, or whether that was actually true in every one of the states that you looked at. Just because you gave the broad numbers, but you didn't give like the state breakdowns. So I was just wondering, is it possible to say in every single state this is the case versus just the broad average? Does that make sense?
I'll go ahead and let Jesse take that.
Sure, Paige, and I'll let Dave Radley, my co-author, chime in on this too. But we have to go back and look at the individual states, and we could get back to you on if that, if there are ones that might buck that trend. The way the analysis was done, these are not averages of state rates, but rather averages of the individuals in the survey who are within these states as a group, if that makes sense. So it's not the individual 15 non-expansion states is an average of those different rates. So we'd have to go back and look at the individual states and let you know if there are any that buck that trend. But that wasn't actually the way that we conducted this particular analysis.
Okay. I was just wondering. Thank you.
Yep.
Paige, this is David Radley. And just to add, it's absolutely possible to look at that. So if you wanted to follow up, you know, right after the call, you know, either me or Jesse could help you with that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All righty.
And our next question comes from Yin Dung from North Carolina Health News. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the call. Apologies for the freight train in my background. you just said it, and I just didn't catch it really fast. The percentages of working-age black adults who live in the 15 non-expansion states and the percentage of Hispanics, working-age Hispanics, who live in those 15 non-expansion states. Something you could just tell me those numbers.
Sure. So it's 46% of working-age black adults overall that currently live in non-expansion states, and then it's 36% of working-age Hispanic adults.
Okay. And then I have a similar question to Paige that I can follow up on is just – if you happen to have the numbers for North Carolina specifically.
Not immediately in front of us, but Dave and I can absolutely follow up with you.
All right, thanks so much.
And once again, that is star and one to join the question queue. Our next question comes from William Ford from the Washington Informer. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Kind of piggybacking on the other two ladies and asking about the states. Let's start here. What are the states that haven't expanded Medicaid, and have you researched why that hasn't been done? And also, I'm looking for some figures from Maryland, please.
So this is Sarah. About 14 states have not yet expanded, and that's with a caveat. Nebraska passed a ballot measure in 2018 and will likely is expected to expand this year sometime. So there are currently about 15 states that don't have an active Medicaid expansion in place. We do know that Kansas is likely to move or looks as though it may be moving forward this year, whether it passes through their state legislature. The reasons why states haven't expanded, this was actually a requirement under the Affordable Care Act, but the Supreme Court decision in 2011 changed that into an option for states. So states could expand if they wanted to, but they did not have to. That is despite the fact that under the Affordable Care Act, there was 100% federal financing. So it is not completely clear why every state didn't expand. There's a multitude of possible reasons for that, including political reasons. It was just difficult for some states with a mixture of political leadership to move expansion through their states. But we have seen over time increasing numbers of states that have done it. But there are just some very large states, and this is one reason why the numbers are so large. About 4 million people are still uninsured who would otherwise be eligible for Medicaid in non-expansion states. So Florida and Texas are very heavily populated states that have not yet expanded.
Thank you. Oh, and if I can get something about Maryland, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Lauren Carlson from CQ Roll Call. Please go ahead. Lauren, your line is open. Can you check your mute function for us?
Hi, thank you. Sorry, I was on mute. Aside from the data point about Black adults in expansion states, were there any other data points that were surprising findings to you that we should walk away from this study with?
You know, I think what really does stand out, I mean, we have tended to look at improvements in coverage rates by income, and I think this is one of the few studies that's actually looked at differences or improvements by race. And so I think that what is striking is the degree to which those differences have narrowed in coverage and access to health care. So coverage, access to health care, cost-related access problems, and having a usual source of care are very closely related to having insurance coverage. So I think the combination, the coverage expansions, lowering uninsured rates across Hispanics and Blacks and whites, but also lowering historical differences across the groups in terms of coverage and access to healthcare. I think it's important to note that we'll continue to see those kinds of improvements as more states expand Medicaid, or if there is a federal solution to the Medicaid coverage gap that we're hearing about in the campaign so far from Democrats. So we'll continue to see. But I think there is also the issue of what happens to Hispanics and Blacks once they are in the care delivery system. And we know that there are longstanding inequities in how people are treated, the care that people get. And so I think we're still going to continue to see racial disparities despite the fact of these very significant coverage expansions and impacts that those have had on disparities. There is still a significant amount of work to do within the delivery system itself.
And our next question comes from Sarah Gantz from Philadelphia Inquirer. Please go ahead. And Sarah, can you check your mute function for us?
Oh, sorry about that. I was muted. Thanks. Thanks for doing the call. I wanted to ask about access. I know the point that you called out in Exhibit 16 is cost-related access problems. I was curious if you looked at all at just access in general. We hear a lot about whether enough doctors accept Medicaid and whether that is an access problem, and I was just curious if that's something that you guys encountered in this study.
That's a really good question. The two access measures that we looked at were cost-related access problems, to the extent to which people are experiencing financial barriers to accessing care, and whether or not people report having a usual source of care, which is an indicator of also an indicator of access. We did not look at other indicators on this measure in this particular study, at least. But I think you're right. You know, this isn't definitive. There is a lot more to be investigated in terms of Black and Hispanic differences between whites and their ability to find a healthcare provider in a timely fashion, transportation distances, the ability of people to get appointments in a timely fashion. And like I said before, their experience once they do have access to healthcare, what their experiences are within the healthcare system.
If you don't mind, just clarifying the response you gave to the question before me, it seemed to me that you were going with that is that while there may still be are still disparities in the way people experience and move through our healthcare system. Reducing these disparities in insurance coverage is sort of a necessary first step to reducing some of those other barriers. Am I on the right track here?
That's right. And, you know, you think about it just generally. We know that coverage is the most important factor in people's ability to access healthcare. So it removes the financial barrier to getting care. But it is a necessary condition, but it is not sufficient in terms of people getting high quality care. And when you look at people who are racial minorities, because of longstanding issues of racial bias, implicit bias in the delivery system, they face yet an even greater hurdle in making that leap from coverage to high quality care and health and good health outcomes.
Great, thank you.
And our next question comes from Ashton Pittman from Deep South Voice. Please go ahead.
Hi, I was just wondering if you could tell me, did you guys find any correlation between the level of, or I guess the levels of white versus non-minority populations in states and resistance to expansion in those states? And can you give me any Mississippi is the state with the highest Black population per capita. Can you give me any specs on when it comes to Mississippi with these metrics?
You know, I had a little bit of a hard time understanding the question. If you could just repeat it, please.
Okay. Basically, I just wondered if you found any correlation between state-level resistance to Medicaid expansion and the minority population in those states, and also give me any specifics on how Mississippi stacks up in the metrics you looked at, considering Mississippi has the highest Black population per capita of any state in the country.
And I'm going to let Jesse take that just with the data points, but I think it's pretty clear when you look at the number of the states that haven't expanded Medicaid. They are concentrated in the South. Mississippi is one, Alabama, Tennessee, and Jesse has the actual statistics on the distribution of the population.
Yeah, I think I would just add to that. You know, the actual statistics that we gave are, you know, that within those 15 states, and that includes Mississippi, 46%. of the black adult population is concentrated within those states, and that's an overrepresentation of where they are nationally. So when we said at the end that they're disproportionately affected by this, that's what we're referring to. I wouldn't say we looked at direct correlation state by state, but I might just go back to the example that we gave with Louisiana and Georgia, just as the potential impact that you might see from some of these similar states if Medicaid expansion were to occur, and that's kind of why we called out that particular example.
Okay.
And our next question comes from Lilo Stainton from NJ Spotlight. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Two questions, if you don't mind. One is, did you look at all at any breakdown on states that run their own marketplaces or exchanges versus ones that depend on the federal, or was that not part of the analysis?
That actually wasn't part of the analysis. There does tend to be a lot of overlap. So states that run their own marketplaces also tend to have expansion, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would be an interesting thing to look at. Some states like California have obviously implemented policies that allow undocumented adults to get coverage. So I think that's in terms of state-based exchanges doing more outreach, spending more on outreach, you would expect to see higher rates of coverage from those kinds of activities and potentially lower disparities.
Okay, thank you. The second question is, does anyone have any theories on why the trend sort of tailed down or leveled off a little, the change leveled off a little after 2016? I'm wondering if it's just a question of, you know, you get to a saturation point or did you have any sense of that, anybody?
I mean, there are probably about four different reasons. Again, the lack of Medicaid expansion in all the states, including these very heavily populated states of Texas and Florida. Congressional and executive branch changes on the Affordable Care Act, for example, removing the individual mandate penalty and that went into effect this past year. Near elimination of federal funding for outreach and enrollment assistance. Mm-hmm. We know that's had an effect. Loosening of restrictions on health plans that don't comply with the Affordable Care Act, like requirements like short-term plans. And I think also just congressional inaction in improving certain aspects of the law, such as enhancing subsidies, addressing at a federal level this Medicaid coverage gap. And then finally, I think and most importantly, because of the numbers we're seeing on Hispanics, that undocumented immigrants aren't eligible for subsidized coverage or Medicaid through the marketplaces.
So a combination. It sounds like a combination of sort of the system inaction on state parts or refusal to pick up the expansion and changes in Congress that were either active or inactive, but as a result led to no more expansion of the system, no ability to promote it and advertise it. Okay.
Yeah, and I think the Medicaid expansion is particularly important. I mean, Jesse's example of Louisiana versus Georgia. So states that might move forward this year, like Kansas and Nebraska, will continue to see coverage gains in those states when those groups of people who are eligible come in. So
right.
Over time, we're going to continue to see some marginal improvement. But I really do think it's going to take some changes to the or fixes to the changes that have the marginal changes that have been made at the regulatory level, at the executive branch level, but also really important to change or enhance the subsidies, making it where people are really having trouble affording the marketplace premiums right over the threshold that makes them eligible for the premium tax credits.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And our next question comes from Sarah Wilson from Morning Consult. Please go ahead.
Hi. I might have missed this, but can you explain kind of why these three sort of data access points, obviously the uninsured rate, but also the cost avoidance and usual source of care, why were these points chosen to kind of explain this phenomenon?
You know, I think we chose coverage because I think that's the obvious, the clearest place that the Affordable Care Act addressed disparities in the healthcare system or just problems getting care in the healthcare system. So we wanted to see what the differences were in coverage between whites, blacks, and Hispanics over the period of time since the law passed, so the coverage expansions went into effect. And then we wanted to see what the effect of those expansions, that improvement in coverage, meant for access to healthcare, both within the groups and then between the groups in terms of narrowing racial disparities. And we chose these two access measures. They're available in federal data sets and are commonly used as good measures of access. And I don't know if Jesse or Dave wants to weigh in on why we chose those.
I'll let Dave weigh in too, but I would maybe just add that, yeah, to Sarah's point, given that there are large federal surveys, they also allowed us to break the data down at a state level and do that. So that's another, to have the sample size to do that is another factor.
And once
again. Yeah, this is David. I don't have anything else to add. Thank you.
And once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Looks like we have a follow-up question from Yin Dugan from North Carolina Health News. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry that I forgot to ask this the first time. I was just wondering about usual source of care that you've mentioned a few times now as an indicator of access. What counts as a usual source of care? Like if someone goes to an ER, is that a usual source of care? Or an urgent care center? Like, can you just give me a better idea of what usual source of care means?
So we read the data point as either sort of having what we would consider a personal health provider, someone you see typically, or a facility that you would typically go to. So we can double check the definition. I think ER would probably fall outside of that. But I believe it's more in the vein of someone that you would typically go to or sort of have in your personal network.
Yeah, this is David Radley. The question is, we build the measure from the behavioral risk factor surveillance system, and it's based on a question that's in that survey, and it does ask specifically, do you have a doctor or a healthcare provider that you consider to be your regular provider of care? And it does, in the question wording, it does sort of go on to exclude things like emergency rooms. So the intent of the question really is to get to people that would consider like a primary care doctor or a nurse practitioner or somebody along those lines who you consider to be the person that you call when you get sick. It's designed to not include things like urgent cares and ERs. You know, hopefully the survey respondents aren't thinking of those types of providers when they respond to the question. But the question is designed to exclude those types of providers.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
And once again, that is star and one to join the question queue. Our next question comes from Emily Woodruff from Time Picking You. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi there. It's the Time Picking, and I'm in Louisiana, where about 50,000 have been kicked off Medicaid recently through wage checks. And I was just wondering if you saw that, a big drop like that, in other states, and how it affected these numbers, or if you have any theories on how that might affect this state.
And thank you for your question. Can I just ask you to repeat the reason? I don't think we could hear it.
Oh, so about 50,000 are kicked off Medicaid recently through wage checks.
Wage checks. We did not, you know, these data only go through 2018, which is, so we can't examine more recent trends like that. Like we can examine, for example, the impact that the public charge rule is having either, even though it's not in effect right now. So some more recent changes to Medicaid in the states wouldn't show up in these data.
Got it. And it wasn't something that you saw in other states, like a large percentage like that of drop?
No, I think, I mean, again, we are not looking at specific states, and we can mm-hmm. and we can do that. So to the extent that we're able to see trends like that at the state level through 2018, we could certainly get back to you on that.
Great, thank you.
And once again, that is star and one to join the question queue. And we will pause a moment to allow questions to join the queue. And it does appear there are no further questions over the phone at this time.
Thank you for listening. If you need additional information, we'll be available this afternoon.